Prabhupada will listen from one chapter in Prabhupada Lilamrita describing Srila Prabhupada's arrival to America. His Grace Rudra Dev Prabhu.
Journey to America. And from the Brotherhood's diary. Today the ship is flying very smoothly. I feel today better, but I am feeling separation from Sri Vrindavan and my Lord Sri Govinda Gopinath Radha Damodar. My only solace is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which I am tasting the nectarine of Lord Chaitanya's Leela. I have left Bharata Bhumi just to execute the order of Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in pursuance of Lord Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification, but have taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His Divine Grace. I depend fully on their mercy, so far away from Vrindavan. Prabhupada's writing on September 10, 1965. The Jaladuta is a regular cargo carrier of the Scindia Steam Navigation Company, but there is a passenger cabin aboard. During the voyage from Calcutta to New York in August and September 1965, the cabin was occupied by Sri Abhoy Charanaravinda Bhaktivinoda Swami, whose age was listed as 69 and who was taken on board bearing a complimentary ticket with food. The Jaladuta, under the command of Captain Arun Pandya, whose wife was also aboard, left at 9 a.m. on Friday, August 13th. In his diary, Srila Prabhupada noted, "The cabin is quite comfortable, thanks to Lord Sri Krishna for enlightening Sumati Murarji for all these arrangements. I am quite comfortable." But on the 14th, he reported seasickness, dizziness, vomiting, Bay of Bengal, heavy rains, more sickness. On the 19th, when the ship arrived in Colombo, Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, Prabhupada was able to get relief from his seasickness. The captain took him ashore and traveled around Colombo by car. Then the ship went on toward Cochin, on the west coast of India. Janmashtami, the appearance day of Lord Krishna, fell on the 20th of August that year. Prabhupada took the opportunity to speak to the crew about the philosophy of Lord Krishna, and he distributed prasada he had cooked himself. August 21st was his 70th birthday, observed without ceremony at sea. That same day, the ship arrived at Cochin, and Srila Prabhupada's trunks of Srimad Bhagavatam volumes, which had been shipped from Bombay, were loaded on board. By the 23rd, the ship had put out to the Red Sea, where Srila Prabhupada encountered great difficulty. He noted in his diary, rain, seasickness, dizziness, headache, no appetite, vomiting. The symptoms persisted, but it was more than seasickness. The pains in his chest made him think he would die at any moment. In 2 days, he suffered 2 heart attacks. He tolerated the difficulty, meditating on the purpose of his mission. But after 2 days of such violent attacks, he thought that if another were to come, he would certainly not survive. On the night of the second day, Prabhupada had a dream. Lord Krishna, in his many forms, was rowing a boat, and he told Prabhupada that he should not fear, but should come alone. Prabhupada felt assured of Lord Krishna's protection, and the violent attacks did not recur. The Jaladuta entered the Suez Canal on September 1st and stopped in Port Said on the 2nd. Srila Prabhupada visited the city with the captain and said that he liked it. By the 6th, he had recovered a little from his illness and was eating regularly again for the first time in 2 weeks. Having cooked his own khichdi and puris, he reported in his diary that his strength renewed little by little. This is from the diary now, Thursday, September 9th. To 4 o'clock this afternoon, we have crossed over the Atlantic Ocean for 24 hours. The whole day was clear and almost smooth. I am taking my food regularly and have got some strength to struggle. There is also a slight tacking of the ship, and I am feeling a slight headache also. But I am struggling, and the nectarine of life is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the source of all my vitality. Friday, September 10th. Today the ship is flying very smoothly. I feel today better daily. You have that at the beginning, so I depend fully on their mercy so far away from me now. During the voyage, Srila Prabhupada sometimes stood on deck at the ship's rail, watching the ocean and the sky and thinking of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vrindavan Dham, and the order of the spiritual master to go preach in the West. Mrs. Pandya, the captain's wife, whom Srila Prabhupada considered to be, quote, an intelligent and learned lady, unquote, foretold Srila Prabhupada's future. If he were to pass beyond this crisis in his health, she said, it would indicate the goodwill of Lord Krishna. The ocean voyage of 1965 was a calm one for the Jaladuta. The captain said that never in his entire career had he seen such a calm Atlantic crossing. Prabhupada replied that the calmness was Lord Krishna's mercy, and Mrs. Pandya asked Prabhupada to come back with them so that they might have another such crossing. And Srila Prabhupada wrote in his diary, if the Atlantic would have shown its usual face, perhaps I would have died, but Lord Krishna has taken charge of the ship. On September 13th, Prabhupada noted in his diary, 32nd day of journey, cooked bhati khichdi. It appeared to be delicious, so I was able to take some food. Today I have disclosed my mind to my companion, Lord Sri Krishna. There is a Bengali poem made by me in this connection. This poem was a prayer to Lord Krishna, and it is filled with Prabhupada's devotional confidence in the mission that he had undertaken on behalf of his spiritual master. An English translation of the opening stanzas follows. I emphatically say to you, O brothers, you will obtain your good fortune from the Supreme Lord Krishna only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is very dear to Lord Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya, the son of Mother Sachi, is unparalleled in his service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. He is that great saintly spiritual master who bestows intense devotion to Krishna at different places throughout the world. By his strong desire, the holy name of Lord Gauranga will spread throughout all the countries of the Western world. In all the cities, towns, and villages on the earth, from all the oceans, seas, rivers, and streams, everyone will chant the holy name of Krishna. As the vast mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conquers all directions, a flood of transcendental ecstasy will certainly cover the land. When all the sinful, miserable living entities become happy, the Vaishnava's desire is then fulfilled. Although my Guru Maharaj ordered me to accomplish this mission, I am not worthy or fit to do it. I am very fallen and insignificant. Therefore, O Lord, now I am begging for your mercy so that I may become worthy, for you are the wisest and most experienced of all. The poem ends. Today that remembrance of you came to me in a very nice way. Because I have a great longing, I call to you. I am your eternal servant, and therefore I desire your association so much. O Lord Krishna, except for you, there is no means of success. In the same straightforward, factual manner in which he had noted the date, the weather, and his state of health, he now describes his helpless dependence on his companion, Lord Krishna, and his absorption in the ecstasy of separation from Krishna. He described the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple, and he praised his own spiritual master, Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, by whose strong desire the holy name of Lord Gauranga will spread throughout all the countries of the Western world. He plainly stated that his spiritual master had ordered him to accomplish this mission of worldwide Krishna consciousness, and feeling unworthy, he prayed to Lord Krishna for strength. The last verses give an unexpected confidential glimpse into Srila Prabhupada's direct relationship with Lord Krishna. Prabhupada called on Krishna as his dear friend and longed for the joy of again wandering the fields of Braja. This memory of Krishna, he wrote, came because of a great desire to serve the Lord. Externally, Srila Prabhupada was experiencing great inconvenience. He had been aboard ship for a month and had suffered heart attacks and repeated seasickness. Moreover, even if he were to recover from these difficulties, his arrival in America would undoubtedly bring many more difficulties. But remembering the desire of his spiritual master, taking strength from his reading of Chaitanya Charitamrita and revealing his mind in his prayer to Lord Krishna, Prabhupada remained confident. After a 35-day journey from Calcutta, the Jaladuta reached Boston's Commonwealth Pier at 5:30 a.m. on September 17, 1965. The ship was to stop briefly in Boston before proceeding to New York City. Among the first things Srila Prabhupada saw in America were the letters A and P. That's a
supermarket.
Yeah, it's a supermarket chain. It actually stands for Atlantic and Pacific. It's an old, one of the oldest supermarket chains in America. So, of course, they painted on a pierfront warehouse. The gray waterfront dawn revealed the ships in the harbor, a conglomeration of lobster stands and drab buildings, and rising in the distance, the Boston skyline. Prabhupada had to pass through U.S. Immigration and Customs in Boston. His visa allowed him a three-month stay only, and an official stamp to indicate his expected date of departure. Captain Pandya invited Prabhupada to take a walk into Boston, where the captain intended to do some shopping. They walked across a footbridge into a busy commercial area with old churches, warehouses, office buildings, bars, tawdry bookshops, nightclubs, and restaurants. Prabhupada briefly observed the city, but the most significant thing about his short stay in Boston, aside from the fact that he had now set foot in America, was that at Commonwealth Pier he wrote another Bengali poem entitled Markane Bhagavat Dharma, Teaching Krishna Consciousness in America. Some of the verses he wrote on board the ship that day are as follows. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me. But I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva Krishna. I do not know how they will be able to understand it, but I know that your causeless mercy can make everything possible, because you are the most expert. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will, they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Therefore, if you so desire their deliverance, then only will they be able to understand your message. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of all the worlds, I can simply repeat your message, so if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladness and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands, so if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhaktivedanta, and now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhaktivedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated 18 September 1965. So this poem was probably about taking the mission of his spiritual master whimsically, or did he understand fully what he was supposed to do, or what his spiritual master wanted him to do? The other disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that went to London, they came back unsuccessful. They were unsuccessful. It seemed like to them it was just perfunctorily they were doing what the spiritual master asked. But all the complete faith and a complete understanding of what he had to do, and so such an amazing. He was now in America. He was in a major American city, rich with billions, populated with millions, and determined to stay the way it was. Prabhupada saw Boston from the viewpoint of a pure devotee of Krishna. He saw the hellish city life, people dedicated to the illusion of material happiness. All his dedication and training moved him to give these people the transcendental knowledge and saving grace of Krishna consciousness. Yet he was feeling weak, lowly, and unable to help them on his own. He was but an insignificant beggar with no money. He had barely survived two heart attacks at sea. He spoke a different language. He dressed strangely. Yet he had come to tell people to give up meeting, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, and to teach them to worship Lord Krishna, who to them was a mythical Hindu god. What would he be able to accomplish? Helplessly, he spoke his heart directly to God. I wish that you may deliver them. I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them. And for convincing them, he would trust in the power of God's holy name and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This transcendental sound would clean away desire for material enjoyment from their hearts and awaken loving service to Krishna. On the streets of Boston, Prabhupada was aware of the power of ignorance and passion that dominated the city. But he had faith in the transcendental process. He was tiny, but God was infinite, and God was Krishna, his dear friend. On the 19th of September, the Jaladuta sailed into New York Harbor and docked at a Brooklyn Pier at 17th Street. Srila Prabhupada saw the awesome Manhattan skyline, the Empire State Building, and like millions of visitors and immigrants in the past, the Statue of Liberty. Srila Prabhupada was dressed appropriately for a resident of Vrindavan. He wore kunti mala, neck beads, and a simple cotton dhoti, and he carried japa mala, chanting beads, and an old chadar, or shawl. His complexion was golden, his head shaven, sika in the back, his forehead decorated with a whitish Vaishnava tila. He wore pointed white rubber slippers, not uncommon for sadhus in India. But who in New York had ever seen or dreamed of anyone appearing like this Vaishnava? He was possibly the first Vaishnava sannyasi to arrive in New York with uncompromised appearance. Of course, New Yorkers have an expertise in not giving much attention to any kind of strange new arrival. You live here in New York, you know about that. okay, big deal. That's in New York. They pretended like that anyway. Srila Prabhupada was on his own. He had a sponsor, Mr. Agarwal, somewhere in Pennsylvania. Surely someone would be here to greet him. Although he had little idea of what to do as he walked off the ship onto the pier, I did not know whether to turn left or right. He passed through the dockside formalities and was met by a representative from Travelers Aid sent by the Agarwals in Pennsylvania, who offered to take him to the Scindia ticket office in Manhattan to book his return passage to India. At the Scindia office, Prabhupada spoke with the ticket agent, Joseph Forster, who was impressed by this unusual passenger's Vaishnava appearance, his light luggage, and his apparent poverty. He regarded Prabhupada as a priest. Most of Scindia's passengers were businessmen or families, so Mr. Forster had never seen a passenger wearing the traditional Vaishnava dress of India. He found Srila Prabhupada to be, quote, a pleasant gentleman, unquote, who spoke of the nice accommodations and treatment he had received aboard the Jaladuta. Prabhupada asked Mr. Forster to hold space for him on a return ship to India. His plans were to leave in about 2 months, and he told Mr. Forster that he would keep in touch, carrying only 40 rupees cash, which he himself called a few hours spending in New York, and an additional $20 he had collected from selling 3 volumes of the Bhagavatam to Captain Pandya. Srila Prabhupada, with umbrella and suitcase in hand, and still escorted by the Traveler's Aid representative, set out for the Port Authority bus terminal to arrange for his trip to Butler. That's the introduction. That's Prabhupada's arrival in America. And Maharaj asked me to say a few words. We're going again in junior order, junior. And actually, America is considered the greatest country in the world, and the Americans are so proud, and but the only really good thing that happened there is that Prabhupada arrived.
That was enough.
it was already started, and so I met these folks, and then was able to join. So thank you, Shiloh, for coming to America.
When you were reading those things, actually just this morning, quite by accident, I was sent a play script this morning. Actually, the chairperson of the DBC sent me this play script to me to see if it was suitable to be performed in Mumbai, the upcoming DBC member, so I'm looking through that and kind of checking to see if everything was in order. I was reading some conversations by Prabhupada, and he was talking about when he came into Boston, and he had to go through customs, and he was thinking how the man said, you know, how long are you going to be in the country? And he thought, well, I have no money, and I have no place to go, and I don't know what I'm doing here, so I couldn't possibly stay longer than 2 months. So he said, 2 months. And so and when I said 2 months, he thought, oh, no problem. And then he stamped his passport. Prabhupada also speaks about how he and in New York would go back to the ticket office and sit, contemplate leaving. And then he would just go there as if to kind of get that desire away and go back. So that's how I was fortunate. I met Srila Prabhupada in 1969, and even before I met Srila Prabhupada, I met his devotees. I took up the chance of Hare Krishna. But Srila Prabhupada, I mean, when you read these poems that Srila Prabhupada wrote on Jaladutta after coming to Boston, you can really feel Srila Prabhupada's complete surrender, Sharanagati, that he just really just wanted to do what his spiritual master said, and he felt so much compassion. What am I supposed to do with these people? It describes in the Lilamrita how Prabhupada looked weird, strange to New Yorkers, but actually, I'm sure that we looked much stranger to Prabhupada than Prabhupada looked to us. And not only did we look stranger, but we smelled stranger. And in many ways behaved very strangely. And you could see that in just a few seconds when Prabhupada came off the boat, he was already thinking, gosh, why'd you bring me here? What am I supposed to do here? So, and he said, he must have brought me for a reason, so make my words work, make my abilities whatever you think they need to be, somehow or other. Let me figure out how to penetrate the hearts of these people. So, even though Richard Dick made a comment that from New York, I know that attitude where kind of nothing is far out. But actually, the whole mentality at that time was to try to be more far out than anyone else. You know, try to dress or act weirder than anyone else. But Prabhupada, he wasn't trying to do anything. He was just trying to serve his spiritual master, and he was just being himself. And in being himself and hearing, it's in writing, his Jaladutta diary, his poems, you can see that he didn't come to America with any business idea. I'm going to become a big guru and I'll get lots of followers. And there's a shaka. Get our chair right now. I'm wondering where you are. Right on. Is it my god sister, the Shaka? Yadavaras was like, very, had a lot of nice associations with sit up here. We're talking about Prabhupada's coming to America. Anyway, so Prabhupada figured out, you know, how to make it work and how to give Krishna consciousness to those people that he came upon, and I'm one of them, she's one of them, it's one of them. And now we also have to figure out how to give Krishna consciousness to so many other people. So we have to raise the ambition to shift that to the idea of the answer. That's why. So he read from the Lalamita, the part, and then we sang Srila Prabhupada's poem on the Lalamita, and then we read from the King of Bhagavatam, and that's what we're all talking about. And since we're going in words in Marathi,
of the Lord is so great that we can meet the pure devotees in their body form, regardless of what are the external situations or external limitations. And there were two points I thought of mentioning when Manohar Prabhu asked me to speak some days ago when I passed by on the way to Lampeter. And there were two important things I wanted to mention about Srila Prabhupada. One is his unparalleled position as the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and as the empowered pure devotee who established Vaishnavism in the West. No one else did it before. Like now, many preachers are coming, not only from the Gaudiya Sampradaya. I read recently on the magazine Hinduism Today, they had this award, the Hindu of the Year. And the Hindu of the Year is, they gave it to one of the leaders of the Nimbarka Sampradaya, who has a temple in Vrindavan, who intends to establish 108 temples all over the world. He focuses on preaching to the Indian communities around the world. And it is a wonderful offering what this Vaishnava is doing. He wants to like chanting 108 beats. This is his offering. He wants to establish 108 temples. I was thinking when I read that, I thought, I don't know how, from the empirical point of view, how accurate it is, but I thought probably he got the idea from Srila Prabhupada. Isn't it? He's from Vrindavan, he's a younger generation. Probably he's a little older than me in physical age. So he got the idea from Srila Prabhupada. And a unique contribution of Srila Prabhupada is that he didn't preach just to the Indians. Actually, he preached to the Westerners. The Indians, he talked about them, about our main allies. Allies?
Yes,
allies. Allies, like in a war, we have allies. So Srila Prabhupada said the Indians are our best allies to fulfill the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is to preach to every person in the world, from every culture. And he was very much interested in the locals, in the local people. So this establishes Srila Prabhupada in an unparalleled position as the acharya in capital. Founded Acharya in capital letters. Many times the term Acharya is used for any guru, any spiritual master who teaches by his example. But actually, Srila Prabhupada is the founder Acharya in capital letters. And not even an Acharya, many times also the term Acharya is given to the leader of an institution, a spiritual institution. For example, in the Gaudiya Math, they use the term Acharya. But Srila Prabhupada, the position of Srila Prabhupada is the position of Acharya of the caliber of Sri Madhvacharya, Sri Ramanujacharya, and even we can say, from a comparative point of view, we could say even more. Because Sri Madhvacharya and Sri Ramanujacharya, they established Vaishnavism in India. But Sri Prabhupada established Vaishnavism all over the world. So his position is unique. And nowadays many, many preachers are coming to preach. But They're using the road that Srila Prabhupada built in working, risking everything. We just here during the reading. He risked his life, he risked everything. He got nothing from the material point of view. But he was the chosen representative by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to establish his mission over the world. So this is one point I wanted to mention. And then the second point I wanted to mention is that Srila Prabhupada gave everything in his books. And many times, like nowadays also, the preachers come and they say, oh, I'm bringing something that Srila Prabhupada didn't bring, something special. But actually, everything is in Srila Prabhupada's books. And the most intimate, since the, from the most basic teachings, the ABC in the spiritual life, you are not this body, to the most intimate, confidential descriptions of divine love, of pure love of God care. And we find this everything from starting with Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when sometimes when people say, oh, we can find something else elsewhere, it's because they don't read enough Srila Prabhupada's books. So, and this is actually his mercy. He worked tirelessly, day and night, to publish so many books, dozens of books, for our benefit. And this is for the benefit not only of our generation, but of the benefit of many generations to come. Thank you very much. If you would like to ask any questions or comments, you can ask too. You can make your comments also.
How he dealt with it, especially.
I have to say that although I read and I heard that Prabhupada was ill, I personally, until the very end, I always saw Prabhupada full of vitality and full of energy and always willing to preach and staying up all hours and flying all over the place. And to me, he was a dynamo. I never saw any indication. Although I know even at the very beginning, there was some ill health in New York, and he had to go back to India and come back again. But from my perception, there was no way for me to perceive that he wasn't well by seeing him or interacting with him.
I remember that I didn't have much association with Srila Prabhupada, but the little bit I saw him in New York, one thing did strike me when he came into the temple room, and when I first saw him, I was chanting my rounds in the temple room, and then the doors swung open, and all these sannyasis walked in, like Ramananda and Satsuru Maharaj, and then Prabhupada was in front. And I saw him just walking in the doors, and he was walking very fast with his cane, and he was walking very fast across the temple room, and he always cleared a path for him. And I thought, he looked very, very energetic. I mean, as fast as any, as energetic as any 18-year-old. And he was walking very fast to the front of the temple room to see the deities. But then he offered obeisances in front of each set of deities. And I was fairly close to the front. I think it was maybe the middle altar, so I was watching him when he was offering those obeisances. And then when he came up, I think it was my imagination too, but I'm sure that I saw him when he was getting up from his obeisances. There was a little grimace, like it wasn't so that easy for him to get back up. And then as soon as I saw that, I was thinking, he shouldn't even have to offer obeisances. He's so old. Except if he just stood there and he just, offered pranams and folded hands, that would be enough for anybody. But instead, he went down and offered obeisances, and then getting up, and I saw him grimace. And I thought, he doesn't have to do that, and I felt but he's doing that for us, or something. I felt we somehow could not have to make him have that extra little pain.
I was a photographer before I became a devotee, so when I became a devotee, I became a photographer in Krishna consciousness, and I traveled with Prabhupada for 2 summers, 1975-1976, when he toured America. And at that time, he had physical problems, there was no doubt. He had colds and trouble with his teeth, but he wouldn't speak about it. It was really remarkable, even to his servant, Shruti Kirti. He often didn't know what Prabhupada was suffering from. He just went on with his daily program. Just like we hear, it's practically miraculous, but when he would travel and pass through time zones, he wouldn't have what we call jet lag. That was unknown to him. He would just step right into the schedule that he had all the way along, translating in the morning, going on his morning walk, reading the deities, reading prasadam, answering letters, massage, his lunch, the whole thing just continued. So practically wherever you were in the world, if you could figure out what time it was, where Prabhupada was, you could tell what he was doing at that time. Well, now Prabhupada's having his massage. Now he's meeting people in the afternoon. And his young servants, who we recently interviewed, Shruti Kirti, for Prabhupada's time in Fiji, and he was traveling at that time with Paramahamsa as the secretary, and Shruti Kirti as the servant. So again, they had this long trip and time changes, And Prabhupada was up, you know, and he rang the bell. Shruti Kirti was sound asleep, right? So he raced into the room trying to wipe the sleep out of his eyes, offered his obeisances. And he got up and Prabhupada said, "So where is Paramahamsa Maharaj?" So Shruti Kirti had to say, "Oh, he's sleeping, Prabhupada. I would call him." So he came in, Paramahamsa, and said, "You're sannyasi. It is daytime. Everyone else is working. Why are you sleeping?" So Prabhupada pushed. And he also, in some sense, he transcended his own difficulties. Just now we're working on this series, Follow Shiva Prabhupada, or up to DVD number 11, which is the final one. And so we have footage of Shiva Prabhupada. As he left. And that also is an extraordinary, something extraordinary. Because Prabhupada, in his own words, he was just a bag of bones at that time. He lost so much weight that just to see him was painful in his new future. And yet, he's there just practically a few weeks before he left this world, lying in his departure bed. He's covered with a sheet, and he's translating Srila Bhagavatam. He cannot even push, he's so weak, he cannot push the button on the dictaphone to record, so Raduna is there. Raduna reads the Sanskrit, and Prabhupada comments on the Sanskrit. And if you read those purports today, you cannot have any idea of the condition Srila Prabhupada was in, isn't it? It's the 10th canto, chapter 13. Pastimes of Lord Rama's cows and cows. And they're as cogent and as pertinent and relevant as any other purport. It's miraculous. It's only it's just miraculous. He uses his final breaths to give us these Bhaktivedanta purports.
Any other questions, comments?
In Boston, Srila Prabhupada was praying that Lord Krishna make his words suitable for the understanding of the American people. So I was just wondering if you might have some particular moment when Srila Prabhupada's speaking made everything clear, you know, about Krishna consciousness. We never can convince of the philosophy.
Are you still waiting?
I'm not sure if I got exactly the question you said. All the words were adapted to the way of
understanding. Someone had a point where they were enlightened and they could understand how Prabhupada's words were suitable in their lives and made them.
Well, that's true because I was 2 years old.
More and am still more, I mean, at least as, I felt that not only Prabhupada's words, but the way Prabhupada distributed Krishna consciousness was quite amazingly relevant to the constituency that he was speaking to. And as I said even before, I mean, I'm sure it was beyond his wildest imagination to meet the people that he met when he came to New York and went to San Francisco. And you know, as much as it was saying that we lied to you, that he looked strange, we looked stranger. So, and yet he knew how to create an atmosphere and create preaching systems that would touch the hearts of people who wore buttons that said, "Question authority, don't trust anyone over 30. And yet Prabhupada was 70, and we trusted him, and we surrendered to him, and you know, we gave up activities which to us were far from sinful, and we just considered them quite normal. But we gave them up. And I remember when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was a student at UB, State University of New York at Buffalo, and my father flew from New York City up to Buffalo to bring me back from my temporary insanity of joining the Hare Krishna movement. And my mother was saying, you know, I've tried to get you to give up smoking, I've tried to get you to give up dope, and you would never listen to me. And now, all of a sudden, you know, you just gave it up. What happened? And the same thing when my son, he fell out of a tree when he was 16 years old, and my mother, again, she said to me, I don't know anything about your spiritual life. That's because she didn't want to know anything more. But she didn't want, no, I don't know anything, but I see the way you're able to tolerate the situation, so there must be something there, because I would never be able to tolerate the situation. So for me, at least, just the way Prabhupada was able to package his Krishna conscious message in prasadam, in kirtan, he molded it in such a way that it was so attractive that even people who had no interest in those things became attracted to those things and changed their lives so significantly in a matter of minutes. Some people in a matter of minutes, within 24 hours, gave up sinful habits, became a chanter, a worshiper of Krishna. So, and in his Bhaktivedanta purports are filled with relevant political, social commentary that very much bring the philosophy of Krishna consciousness home to the people of that time, even with the names of, you know, presidents and political maneuvers and different things. His reading in school and so many things to bring the Krishna consciousness to a level which we could receive and accept. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. I mean, if he had given lectures in this, you know, traditional Vedic style, or what to speak of the style of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which are so erudite and scholarly, I mean, for most of us it would have been impossible. But it was so easy to accept Srila Prabhupada.
We were the hippie culture of the 60s and 70s and wearing the buttons from just anyone over 30. And I was in Detroit, living most of my life in Detroit, but just before joining the movement, I was doing my hippie travels and hitchhiking and whatever in Florida. So I ended up in Florida and Miami Beach. And Miami Beach was one of the places where I was. So I don't know how many of you have been to Miami Beach. But Miami Beach has a reputation for being like a shelter or a final resting place for Americans. So a lot of Americans come there to die.
America's changing body.
So, yes, the living changing bodies exhibit in Miami Beach. So yeah, these kids there, you see a living changing bodies exhibit. So people come there to spend their last days because there's a beach there, there's water, there's sunshine, there's warm weather, and there's big condominiums, and they can spend all their money. And anyway, so I was seeing that. I was walking on the beach and just seeing all these old people creeping along, you know, and 70 years old, same age as Prabhupada, just creeping along. If you said something to them, like, hello, sir, and it would take a few minutes for them to, hello, you know, to even get raise their head up. Anyway, it maybe exaggerated, but they're like that. It was, that's what I was seeing, these 70-year-olds. So then when I saw, my first exposure to Srila Prabhupada was over the Back to Godhead, and it was one particularly nice Back to Godhead that had his lecture in the center was had a lot of pictures of Prabhupada, and it was Prabhupada leaning back on bolsters, you know, and relaxed and just smiling, leaning back on bolsters and speaking and smiling and bright eyes, big smile, and so I could understand. So I knew that he was old. I knew that he was 70 years old, but this isn't the same thing that I'm used to seeing. I know he's different from these other 70-year-olds, completely different. So that was another thing that attracted me to Prabhupada. I wanted to find out what he had that these other people didn't have. He's the same age, but totally different. And so, yeah, that was one attractive thing. And then another thing I was about to question, Prabhupada's words, when can I understand that they were suitable? Or, I had that realization, like when, even now, when you hear some of these other gurus or swamis from India, or even like, say, Dr. Patel, who was Prabhupada's friend, you know, and probably made good friends with Prabhupada in Vrindavan. Dr. Patel would walk with Prabhupada, and he would get into, he would ask Prabhupada a question, or try to expand on something that Prabhupada had said, and then you would hear Dr. Patel speak this and that. I'm not going to try to imitate it. And it was just so, you know, up and down this, right, trying to explain something. If I had to listen to him all day or listen to his lectures, I would just go and I would fall asleep, first of all, and then I would, after the second day, I would say, that's enough. But Prabhupada was, everything was just clear. Like Americans like to have things just clear and nice, you know, clear English and spoken in a straightforward and a logical manner. And Prabhupada was just the essence of that. So that was so nice reading his talks, and it wasn't this flowery language and this this in the sky thing that nobody really knows. Everybody gets their own imagine it. But Prabhupada is just so so clear about it.
Thank you.
Okay, Manohar Prabhu told me that he's not leaving, that we don't want to overdo it with the time. One last thing I'd like to say. As today is a very auspicious day, it marks the arrival of Krishna consciousness to the West. I would suggest if you could discuss with some of your friends, like talking maybe over prasad or another time, what it means to you, Srila Prabhupada's arrival to the West, how it has touched your life. Please take a few minutes today to reflect on that and share it with a friend. Right? It's a little assignment, just to get into it. We're warming up for the year. I hope you don't mind. Thank you very much. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.